Big changes are coming to the way we get fuel into and around the country, and there are warnings about the huge implications of getting it wrong. The price of petrol's already burning a hole through many people's pockets, and with rising inflation and a war in Europe, ignited by the energy giant Russia, the pain at the pump won't be extinguished anytime soon. Amidst this situation comes the transition of Marsden Point next month from oil refinery to import terminal. Instead of product being refined here and shipped to ports around the country, it's estimated 175 big tankers will bring in what we need each year. Roughly one pumping and dumping into our supplies every 2 days. The two tankers that have been chugging their way around the country's coastline, the MT Kōkako and MT Matuku, will be taken out of service in a few weeks. And here's where the oil supply issue gets stickier. Under international agreements, New Zealand must hold 90 days cover for fuel. With Marsden open, we have 60 days crude and 30 days we can buy off other countries we have agreements with if we need it. But when Marsden goes import only, that arrangement will change. And MBIE, the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, is consulting on this. Our first guest says he has a solution. Craig Harrison is the head of the Maritime Union and says there are two tankers about to be retired that could form part of the solution. His union is one of three, along with the Merchant Service Guild and the Aviation and Marine Engineers Association, which have formed the Save Our Tankers campaign. Their argument is that becoming entirely import only puts New Zealand at the mercy of external forces that risk the country's fuel security. Craig is with us first. Kia ora, good morning.
Good morning.
So explain from a logistics and a supply perspective your argument for retaining these tankers. What's the risk you see with the forthcoming change?
Well, we see the risk sort of parallel to what was seen in the container freight trade, where with the demand and the supply and the constraints that it was seen in that with shipping. Now, while the shipping for oil might have been a bit depressed over the last couple of years, it'll soon to take off with the world opening up after COVID. But we're worried about, for instance, it takes about 16 days for a tanker to come from Asia down to New Zealand. So we're doing some rough calculations, and using the model that proposed by Zed, I think they'll need about 24 to 30 odd tankers circulating between Asia and New Zealand. So you're totally reliant to supply refined product to New Zealand. So you lose that capacity in regards to the bigger crude vessels calling into New Zealand and dropping a massive amount of crude off, and then it being refined. And then a just-in-time inventory model where the two New Zealand tankers have been plying their trade up and down New Zealand, supplying local ports. That disappears with the international vessels, which you're totally reliant on.
Are we moving from having a smaller number of vessels coming here less often to having a lot more vessels needing to come more often?
Well, we are. We're trying to work it out, but we are. When you think about the crude tankers that come to New Zealand, for example, are very large vessels calling into Marsden Point, averaging about once a week, then dropping off to two, then by distributing fuel around the country, you've got the two New Zealand tankers. So then over the years, the two New Zealand tankers do about 200 port calls a year and deliver about 2.5 billion litres of product around New Zealand. So the new model requires on the tankers about the same size as the ones we've got now, if not a little bit bigger on the New Zealand case, but actually coming from Asia. So you're going to have to eject a lot more shipping into the run to keep up with demand.
What do you see as the risk? What we saw with a lot of the shipping hassles under the pandemic was that it was container shipping most affected, and often it was because the containers were in the wrong place, and one thing being out of sync anywhere in the chain threw the whole chain out. Is it different with these vessels bringing fuel, refined fuel? Is there any reason to think they would get caught in that kind of a logjam?
Yeah, it is. It's just a supply chain logistics, whether it's bulk wheat or bulk fuel or containers. The same market forces are in action. And with what's happening in the Northern Hemisphere with Ukraine and Russia, you'll see like the rates for spot charter rates for tankers will start going through the roof. And you'll see a lot of countries starting to stockpile fuel in tankers. And, you know, so then we lose our control with, for instance, having New Zealand flag tankers to, like, send them to Australia to pick up product or to Asia. And it's just the market force, and wherever these tankers get the most charter rates, that's where they'll head to.
Just to be clear, that the two tankers you're talking about retaining are for domestic supply only. So currently they pick up from Marsden fuel that's refined there and distributed around the country, right? You're not talking about having a permanent sort of or any sort of permanent charter for what is imported to the country.
Well, we're saying suggesting that the two tankers be retained. We know the MBIE is looking for interest for increased storage, and yet we're seeing storage disappear in a couple of weeks. We were saying that you've got the two New Zealand flag tankers, that there could be a way that the oil companies are forced to hold on to these as part of our contingency for holding stocks in New Zealand, because it can be considered as a flag tanker out of New Zealand that's actually resides in New Zealand. But these tankers could insert themselves into that milk run, if you like, up to Asia and picking up product and bringing it to New Zealand. Then, in times of when a natural disaster or something that we need these tankers to be readily standing by in New Zealand, then you've got that capacity to turn them on.
We've seen that happen already with some of the meat companies, I think AFCO, chartering its own ship, charter ship, to get product out to market because of the current crisis. And they confirm that prices for chartering ships are going up and up in a crisis. So this is kind of replicating that model, right?
It is, and we're trying to think of ways that you think like to retain more storage in New Zealand. So with the crude disappearing and it only being refined product, until the tanks are increased to carry more refined product, New Zealand's obligation under their international agreement is to actually pick up fuel tickets held overseas. And it just seems that's at this time where we're seeing what's happening in, for instance, the Northern Hemisphere, but also we can't forget what the geopolitical situation looked like coming out of Asia, where all these refineries are based.
It's an important point to note, actually, when you're talking full fuel security for New Zealand. As I understand it, most of what we do import, the crude we do import, comes through Asia, right? Not that it's without its own geopolitical risks at this time. But can you explain any more, Craig, about the route it does have into New Zealand?
Well, mostly, if you look at the map, basically, if you're coming from, if you think about Japan, basically sneaking its way down through to the top of Australia, then coming down to New Zealand. So we're at the end of a rope, for want of a better word. There's nowhere past us that these oil tankers can, or fuel tankers can drop product and then move on. So there's dead legs that leave New Zealand. So we'll be paying, New Zealanders will be paying the charter rate for the vessels, whether they're empty or full. And depending on their size, the bigger they are, the more you pay. So we think the fuel costs will be going up, and the fuel companies will just be passing that cost on to the consumer.
Does it touch the South China Sea, that delivery route?
Yeah, it does. It does come through there in the Philippines and that. So if that becomes a hot spot, then there'll be big diversions, and they'll head further out into the Pacific and to bypass that. For instance, the conflict that's up in Ukraine now, a lot of the tankers are exiting the Black Sea, as you can imagine.
Yes, I can. There are jobs on the line here too for your members, right? If these two charters are retired, sorry, these two ships are retired, the Kokako and the Matuku, that's what, 100 jobs going?
Yep, there's about 80 direct crew and about 100 when you add up, the odd relievers. But also, that these vessels over years have been great trainers of New Zealand seafarers. And in one of our campaigns, there's an image in one of the product where we've got four young women on board those vessels now going through the training. So, they've been a significant employer of New Zealanders. And once you lose those skills, you don't get them back in a hurry. And New Zealand's trend, the government's indicated that, they want to transition to a blue economy and try and, use more efficient way of moving freight. So even if you think of like the carbon footprint model, that no way can we keep on trucking stuff, but these coastal tankers serve a great purpose in not only employing people, but educating people.
Thank you, Craig. Harrison is the head of the Maritime Union. 17 minutes past nine. Well, listening in is Julian Hughes, who is Z Energy's General Manager of Supply. Morena, Julian.
Kia ora, Aaron. Catching.
It makes a lot of sense on the face of it, doesn't it? There's a lot of moving parts to the change in New Zealand's fuel security coming when Marsden Point transitions. What's your view on the companies getting together, the fuel companies getting together and retaining the service, shipping service?
Yeah, well, I think to start off with, it's, you know, it's worth acknowledging that we're in a period of pretty significant uncertainty and change. You know, 2 years of responding to COVID, you know, Russia invading Ukraine and, you know, pending war in Eastern Europe, if that gets worse. So we're like no one else in our industry. We're learning to respond to those changes. And I guess in my view, it's understanding the risks that that come with that uncertainty. But, you know, we've looked at a whole range of options as part of this transition, which is a significant transition for the industry. I mean, we've been doing supplying fuel and refining in New Zealand for over 50 years. So, you know, moving to an import model was a significant change. And we certainly acknowledge that as part of this work. But in terms of how we're doing it and moving to an import model, we think that we've got a way of doing that that is, you know, the most economic and reduces the risk.
Most economic is one thing, reducing the risk might be another. You mentioned the current situations, a 1-in-100-year pandemic, well, we're living it. The risk of a new war in Europe, well, we're living it. The geopolitical risks around the South China Sea and China, well, we're living it. It's a little bit difficult to see how and why this is the time to reduce New Zealand's emergency fuel supply. And even on this bigger picture of Marsden, can you confirm that it was possible to supply something like 20% of New Zealand's fuel supplies from oil actually produced in New Zealand itself and refined at Marsden? If we were in a crisis, if we were in an absolute crisis and needing to keep supermarket trucks on the road, the police on the road, the military on the road, we actually could refine enough of our own fuel to do it. Is that correct, Julian? That's about to change.
Yeah, it is about to change. And there are times where we have used, and it's no different to others, where we have bought New Zealand-based crudes. I think the bit that's missing there, though, is that to hold that model, you still have to have a refinery ready to be to go. And paying for and maintaining a refinery to be able to produce at 20%, it's just not an economic model. So that argument I've heard a number of times, it doesn't stack up in terms of trying to...
What would it cost? We've just, you know, the government's just put aside around $40 billion to deal with a pandemic crisis. So crises are expensive in and of themselves. So what would it cost to retain the ability to refine an emergency level of oil here?
Oh, well, I haven't got the specifics on that. I won't comment on that. What I would say is that the shareholders of RNZ looked at a model that was the current model.
Refining New Zealand, just to be clear. Not our bosses. Yeah. Refining New Zealand. Carry on.
Oh, sorry. Did I say sorry? Yeah. RNZ. Yeah, refining New Zealand. That was back in August after a significant strategic review and a long period of assessment, including independent reports. And what they concluded was it wasn't in the best interests of shareholders in the company, and therefore take from that the economics to keep the refinery going in its current state. So if you just take that as the case, trying to run it at, say, 20% or whatever the percentages of New Zealand crude, you know, I think you can make your own judgment on that. That would be a very difficult and expensive way of keeping
Had the government ponied up and paid to keep a supply, subsidised a supply, would that have changed that decision?
I don't know is the short answer. I think... you know, you could take the case, and I think this was part of how it was established, was that, you know, we would stop refining at some time in New Zealand, particularly as, you know, fuel demand decreases as we electrify and move to, you know, greener models of transport. COVID certainly exacerbated some of that, so you could argue that brought the decision forward. And we have seen in Australia, you know, the Australian government has subsidised and supported refinery there, but we've seen the same model. We've seen most of the refineries in Australia close. So the short answer is I don't know, but I don't think it would have.
All right, so let's look at what happens now then, because for a start, could you speak to this business of how much now does need to be kept in reserve? Because we've moved from it being two-thirds crude and a third refined, if I've got that correct. What do you anticipate will be, what are the discussions around a new level of reserve that matches what we used to have?
Yeah, well, it's pretty good to start with your point there that, you know, when we say moving to a refined import model, we already do that, right? So 30% of the products we sell now are refined products that we import, and we are now changing that to be 100%. So that is a significant change, but it's not brand new. I think that's probably an important first point to make. In terms of what that does to our supplies, so again, another argument we've often heard is that having a refinery increases security of supply, and there is an argument that that gives you some slightly longer product in country, but it still needs to be imported here, right? So if you had a significant impact on crude supply in the current model, you could end up with a similar sort of situation than you would if it was an imported model. So those two points I think are relevant. And then you get to, so what does that mean in terms of overall sort of stock holding? And our view is that if you consider the product that we currently have in country and then consider the product that would be on the water in this new model coming into New Zealand, then you actually get to a point where the supply is about the same or comparable. And so that's a little bit of a different model, it's a different way of thinking about it.
So what you're telling me is that you would count fuel destined for New Zealand that is not in New Zealand as being part of the supply. What happens if those ships get diverted? What happens is, as has happened in this pandemic, freight we thought was coming here, well, sorry, we need to make up time and we're going to much bigger customers somewhere else. There's no contingency for that. Are you proposing that the same level of reserve we currently have in country will not be in country under this new model?
Just going back to the first point, yes, that's what we're proposing, or that's what I'm saying, is that if you counted the product that was on the water, you would end up with similar days cover. And, you know, you could take the case, and there is a risk. There's always a risk that you get some impact on your supply chain. I mean, that's what my job is.
It's a massive risk, but it's really unlikely.
Well, we think it's really unlikely, Catherine, that you would get all of those ships just diverted at all times.
Perhaps not all of them, but we could end up with the same kind of supply constraints that we're seeing now right across the construction sector, for example. We could see fuel shortages, and this is just in a pandemic situation, you know, not even in the more extreme situation we might find ourselves in were there to be an international conflict.
Yeah, well, that's not our assessment of the risk, right? We actually think the supply chain flexibility increases in this model. So it's not to say that you couldn't get some interruption of some shipping. I'm not sitting here saying that's not a possibility, but what we believe is that we've got the ability through a range of different suppliers, a range of different refineries, the ability to manage shipping and scheduling through different global routes.
Why would they prioritise New Zealand? Why would they prioritise the last stop at the bottom of the world, essentially, in a crisis situation, or actually in a normal situation, but where their supply chains were constrained and they've got much bigger customers paying a lot more money? Why on earth would they prioritise us? And this is the contingency that people are pointing out. We've got our exporters living this now and hiring their own charters to get product to market.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's the way to think about it. We say, why would they prioritise us? We'd work with our suppliers who have contracts to meet our requirements. There's a big assumption that people are paying more than us. We would pay under a contract for supply of refined fuel into New Zealand, and I have no reason to believe that we would be cut out for any reason. And even if we were, or if there were disruptions, is what I'm saying, is I think there's flexibility for us to manage that. And
What would the flexibility be?
Well, you could term up buy on the spot market. So you'd be more talking about price than security.
On the question of these two charter ships, again, is it not worth giving it a go for a year or two? Look, here we are. We're still in the pandemic. Lord knows what's going to happen with conflict in Europe. Rising inflation, constraint on energy supplies, possibly all for a period of years to come. Seriously. Is it not worth, as part of this very major transition the country is going through, not just your companies, but the country dependent on your product, does it not make sense to transition by keeping these charters, see how things go, see if they can be part of the planning for a period of time, contingency planning, and then, okay, retire them if they're really not needed. Or retire them when we're through this apparently exceptional time, hopefully exceptional time.
Yeah, well, a couple of things there. I mean, I don't want to comment too much on the ship. I mean, NZ's part of a joint venture, which as you know, which is Coastal Law Logistics, which manages the ships, and I don't want to speak for them on this call. What I would say, though, is that's our assessment, is that there isn't a... they're intimately tied with the refining model. And so once the refining model goes, it makes it really hard to understand how those ships could provide certainly the level of contingency that I heard Craig speaking to, in addition to what we can get off the international markets.
Okay.
So that's one point. And then yep. The second point, just quickly, because it is different from containers or the container freight, is that in New Zealand, most and certainly our large ports have separate oil wharfs. So the idea that they're going to get caught up in some sort of disruption due to container freight is just not the case.
It wasn't about the container issue wasn't about whether that would affect your operations. It's an example of how in a crisis time a breakdown in supply has had very significant impacts, and that people have had to go, big companies, big New Zealand exporters have had to turn to a charter model as a contingency to get their product to market. That was the example.
Sure, I understand that, but also what I heard was there was this idea that we'd get delays or need contingencies in New Zealand waters, and all I was saying is that there's
all right.
One difference.
I appreciate it.
There are separate waters.
I appreciate your time. Thank you, both of you. Julian Hughes of Z Energy, Craig Harrison of the Maritime Union. These are big changes. We're going to discuss them on Friday with the Energy Minister, Megan Woods, who will be with us for an interview on that and other energy-related matters.